The caverns that opened before Rincewind were full of mist and tasteful room dividers. Now and again screams of ennui rose from between the pot plants, but mainly there was the terrible numbing silence of the human brain being reduced to cream cheese from the inside out.
"I don't understand," said Eric. "Where are the furnaces? Where are the flames? Where," he added hopefully, "are the succubi?"
Rincewind peered at the nearest exhibit. A disconsolate demon, whose badge proclaimed it to be Azarimoth, the stench of dog breath, and moreover hoped that the reader would have a nice day, was sitting on the edge of a shallow pit wherein lay a rock, on which a man was chained and spread-eagled. A very tired-looking bird was perched beside him. Rincewind thought that Eric's parrot had it bad, but this bird had definitely been through the mangle of life. It looked as though it had been plucked first, and then had its feathers stuck back on. Curiosity overcame Rincewind's usual cowardice. "What's going on?" he said. "What's happening to him?" The demon stopped kicking his heels on the edge of the pit. It didn't occur to it to question Rincewind's presence. It assumed that he wouldn't be here unless he had a right to be. The alternative was unbelievable.
"I don't know what he'd done," it said, "but when I first came here his punishment was to be chained to that rock, and every day an eagle would come down and peck his liver out. Bit of an old favourite, that one."
"It doesn't look as though it's attacking him now," said Rincewind.
"Nah, it's all changed. Now it flies down every day and tells him about its hernia operation." "Now it's effective, I'll grant you," said the demon sadly, "but it's not what I'd call torture."
Rincewind turned away, but not before catching a glimpse of the look of terminal agony on the victim's face. It was terrible. There was worse, however. In the next pit, several chained and groaning people were being shown a series of paintings. A demon in front of them was reading from a script.
"This is when we were in the fifth circle. Only you can't see where we stayed. It was just off to the left there. And this is that funny couple we met. You'd never believe it. They lived on the icy plains of doom, just next door to..."
Eric looked at Rincewind.
"It's showing them pictures of itself on holiday," he said.
They both shrugged and walked away, shaking their heads. Then there was a small hill. At the bottom of the hill there was a round rock. Beside the rock sat a manacled man, his despairing head buried in his hands. A squat green demon stood beside him, almost buckling under the weight of an enormous book.
"I've heard of this one," said Eric. "Man who went and defied the gods or something. Got to keep pushing that rock up the hill, even though it rolls back all the time."
The demon looked up.
"But first," it trilled, "he must listen to the unhealthy and unsafety regulations governing the lifting and moving of large objects."
Volume 93 of the Commentaries, in fact. The regulations themselves comprised a further 1,440 volumes. Part 1, that is. Rincewind had always liked boredom, treasuring it if only because of its rarity value. It had always seemed to him that the only times in his life when he wasn't being chased, imprisoned, or hit were when he was being dropped from things, and while falling a long way always had a certain sameness about it, it did not really count as boring. The only time he could look back on with a certain amount of fondness was his brief spell as assistant librarian at Unseen University, when there wasn't much to do except read books, make sure the librarian's banana supply wasn't interrupted, and rarely help him with a particularly recalcitrant grimoire. Now he realised what made boredom so attractive. It was the knowledge that worse things, dangerously exciting things, were going on just around the corner, and that you were well out of them. For boredom to be enjoyable, there had to be something to compare it with. Whereas this was just boredom on top of more boredom, winding in on itself until it became a great, crushing sledgehammer which paralysed all thought and experience and pounded eternity into something like flannel. "This is dreadful," he said. The chained man raised a haggard face.
"You're telling me," he said. "I used to like pushing the ball up the hill. You could stop for a chat. You could see what was going on. You could try various holds and everything. Oh, it was a bit of a tourist attraction. People used to point me out. I wouldn't say it was fun, but it gave you a purpose in the afterlife.
And I used to help him, said the demon, its voice raw with sullen indignation. Give you a bit of a hand sometimes, didn't I? Pass on a bit of gossip and that. Sort of encourage him when it rolled back and that. I'd say things like, whoops, there goes the bleeder again. And he'd say, bugger it. We had some times, didn't we? Great times. It blew its nose.
Rincewind coughed.
It's getting too much, said the demon. We used to be happy in the old days. It wasn't as if it used to hurt anyone much, and, well, we was all in it together.
That's it, said the chained man. You knew if you kept your nose clean, you'd stand a chance of getting out one day. You know, once a week now I have to stop this for craft lessons.
That must be nice, said Rincewind uncertainly. The man's eyes narrowed.
Basket work, he said.
I've been here 18 millennia, demon and imp, grumbled the demon. I learned my trade, I did. 18,000 bloody years behind the pitchfork, and now this? Reading a sonic boom echoed the length of hell.
Oi, oi, said the demon. He's back. He sounds angry, too.
We'd better get our heads down.
And indeed, all over the circles of Hades, demons and damned were groaning in unison and getting back to their private hells. The chained man broke into a sweat.
Look, Vizimuth, he said, couldn't we just sort of miss out one or two paragraphs?
It's my job, said the demon wretchedly. You know he checks up. It's more than my job's worth.
He broke off, gave Rincewind a sad grimace, and patted the sobbing figure with a gentle talon.
Tell you what, he said kindly, I'll skip some of the sub-clauses.
Rincewind took Eric by an unresisting shoulder.
We'd better get along, he said quietly.
This is really horrible, said Eric as they walked away. It gives Evil a bad name.
Said Rincewind. He didn't like the sound of him being back and him being angry. Whenever something important enough to deserve capital letters was angry in the vicinity of Rincewind, it was usually angry with him.
If you know such a lot about this place, he said, perhaps you can remember how to get out.
Eric scratched his head.
It helps if one of you is a girl, he said. According to Ephebian mythology, there's a girl who comes down here every winter.
To keep warm?
I think the story says she actually creates the winter, sort of.
I've known women like that, said Rincewind, nodding wisely.
Or it helps if you've got a lyre, I think.
Ah, we could be on firmer ground here, said Rincewind. He thought for a bit and then said, My dog has six legs.
The kind you play, said Eric patiently.
Oh.
And when you do leave, if you look back, I think pomegranates come into it somewhere, or you turn into a piece of wood.
I never look back, said Rincewind firmly. One of the first rules of running away is never look back.
There was a roar behind them.
Especially when you hear loud noises, Rincewind went on. When it comes to cowardice, that's what sorts out the men from the sheep. You run straight away.
He grabbed the skirts of his robe.
And they ran and ran until a familiar voice said, "Oh, ho there, dear lads. Hop up. It's amazing how you meet old friends down here."
And another voice said, What's name?
Where are they?
The sub-lords of hell trembled.
This was going to be dreadful.
It might even result in a memo.
They can't have escaped, rasped Astfigl. They're here somewhere. Why can you not find them? Am I surrounded by incompetence as well as fools?
My lord.
The demon princes turned. The speaker was Duke Vasanego, one of the oldest demons. How old? No one knew. But if he didn't actually invent original sin, at least he made one of the first copies. In terms of sheer enterprise and deviousness of mind, he might even have passed for human, and in fact generally took the form of an old, rather sad lawyer with an eagle somewhere in his ancestry. And every demonic mind thought,
Poor old Vasnago. He's done it this time. This won't be just a memo. This will be a policy statement, CC'd to all departments and a copy for files. Astfagel turned slowly, as though mounted on a turntable. He was back in his preferred form now, but had pulled himself together, as it were, on a higher level of emotion. The mere thought of living humans in his domain made him twang with fury like a violin string. You couldn't trust them. They were unreliable. The last human allowed down here alive had given the place a terribly bad press. Above all, they made him feel inferior. Now the full wattage of his anger focused on the old demon.
"You had a point to make," he said.
"I was merely going to say, Lord, that we have made an extensive search of all 8 circles, and I am really certain—"
"Silence! Don't think I don't know what's going on," growled Astfagel, circling the drawn figure. "I've seen you, and you, and you—"
his trident pointed at some of the other old lords.
"Plotting in corners, encouraging rebellion. I rule here, is that not so? And I will be obeyed."
Vasnago was pale. His patrician nostrils flared like jet intakes. Everything about him said, "You pompous little creature, of course we encourage rebellion. We're demons. And I was maddening the minds of princes when you were encouraging cats to leave dead mice under the bed, you small-minded, paper-worshipping nincompoop." Everything about him said this, except for his voice, which said calmly,
"No one is denying this, sire."
"Then search again, and the demon who let them in is to be taken to the lowest pit and disassembled. Is that clear?"
Vasnago's eyebrows rose.
"Old Urgle, Flogger, sire. He was foolish, certainly, but he is a loyal—"
"Are you by any chance endeavouring to contradict me?"
Vasnago hesitated. Dreadful as he privately held the king to be, demons are strong believers in precedence and hierarchy. There were too many young demons pressing below them for the senior lords to openly demonstrate the ways of regicide and coup, no matter what the provocation. Vasnago had plans of his own. No sense in spoiling things now.
"No, sire," he said, "but that will mean, sire, that the dread portal is no longer—"
"Do it!"
The luggage arrived at the dread portal. There was no way to describe how angry you can get running nearly twice the length of the space-time continuum, and the luggage had been pretty annoyed to start with. It looked at the hinges, it looked at the locks. It backed away a bit and appeared to read the new sign over the portal. Possibly this made it angrier, although with the luggage there wasn't any reliable way of telling because it spent all its time beyond, in a manner of speaking, the hostility event horizon. The doors of hell were ancient. It wasn't just time and heat that had baked their wood to something like black granite. They'd picked up fear and dull evil. They were more than mere things to fill a hole in the wall. They were bright enough to be dimly aware of what their future was likely to hold. They watched the luggage shuffle back across the sand, flex its legs and crouch down. The lock clicked. The bolts dragged themselves back hurriedly. The great bars jerked from their sockets. The doors flung themselves back against the wall. The luggage untensed. It straightened. It stepped forward. It almost strutted. It passed between the straining hinges and, when it was nearly through, turned and gave the nearest door a damn good kick. There was a great treadmill. It didn't power anything and had particularly creaky bearings. It was one of Astfagel's more inspired ideas and had no use whatsoever except to show several hundred people that if they had thought their lives had been pretty pointless, they hadn't seen anything yet.
"We can't stay here forever," said Rincewind. "We need to do things, like eat."
"Yep, that's one of the tremendous advantages of being a damned soul," said Ponce de Querm. "All the old bodily cares fade away. Of course, you get a completely new set of cares, but I have always found it advisable to look for the silver lining."
"What's name?"
said the parrot, who was sitting on his shoulder.
"Fancy that," said Rincewind. "I never knew animals could go to hell, although I can quite see why they made an exception in this case."
"Up yours, wizard!"
"'Why don't they look for us here? That's what I don't understand,' said Eric.
"'Shut up and keep walking,' said Rincewind. "'They're stupid, that's why. They can't imagine that we would be doing something like this.'
"'Yes, they're right there. I can't imagine that we are doing something like this either,' said Eric.
Rincewind treadled for a bit, watching a crowd of frantically searching demons hurry past.
"'So you didn't find the Fountain of Youth, then?' he said,
feeling that he should make some conversation.
"'Oh, but I did,' said De Quirm earnestly. "'A clear spring, deep in the jungle. It was very impressive. I had a good long drink, too. Or draught, which I think is the more appropriate word.'
"'And?' said Rincewind.
"'It definitely worked, yes. For a while there I could definitely feel myself getting younger.'
"'But,' Rincewind waved a vague hand to take in De Quirm, the treadmill, the towering circles of the pit.
"'Ah,' said the old man. "'Of course, that's the really annoying bit. I'd read so much about the fountain, and you'd have thought someone in all those books would have mentioned a really vital thing about the water, wouldn't you?'
"'Which was?
Boil it first.
Set it all, doesn't it? Terrible shame, really.'
The luggage trotted down the great spiral road that linked the circles of the pit. Even if conditions had been normal, it probably would not have attracted much attention. If anything, it was rather less astonishing than most of the denizens.
"'This is really boring,' said Eric.
"'That's the point,' said Rincewind.
"'We should—'
The mirror considered the available options.
"'I might be able to hear some creaking, Lord,' it ventured.
"'And?'
"'I smell smoke.'
"'No smoke. I specifically banned all open fires, a very old-fashioned concept. It gave the place a bad name.'
"'Nevertheless, Master.'
"'Show me Hades.'
The mirror gave of its best. The king was just in time to see the treadwheel, its bearings glowing red-hot, crash down from its mountings and roll, as deceptively slowly as an avalanche, across the country of the damned. Rincewind hung from the pushbar, watching the rungs whir past at a speed that would have burned the soles of his sandals if he'd been foolish enough to let his feet down. The dead, however, were taking it all with the cheerful aplomb of those who know that the worst has already happened to them. Cries of, "'Pass the candy floss!' drifted down. He heard Laviolus commending the wheel's splendid traction and explaining to De Quirm how, if you have a vehicle which put down its road in front of it, just like the luggage was in fact doing, and then you covered it with armour, then wars would be less bloody, over in half the time, and everyone could spend even longer going home. The luggage made no comment at all. It could see its master hanging a few feet away, and just kept going. It may have occurred to it that the journey was taking some time, but that was time's problem. And so, flinging out the occasional screaming soul, bumping and gyrating and crushing the occasional luckless demon, the wheel bowled on. It smashed against the opposite cliff.
Lord Vasanego smiled.
"'Now,' he said, "'it is time.'
The other senior demons looked a bit shifty. They were, of course, steeped in evil, and Astfagel was definitely not one of us and the most revolting little oik ever to oil his way into the post.
"'But, well, this, perhaps there were some things that were too—'
"'Learn from the ways of humans,' mimicked Vasanego. He bade me learn from humans, me, the impudence, the arrogance. But I watched. Oh, yes, I learned. I planned.
The look on his face was unspeakable. Even the lords of the nethermost circles who gloried in villainy had to turn their heads. Duke Drazometh Inferno. Eric crawled out from under a broken spar and looked up.
Oh, dear,
he said. The Demon King twirled the trident. Suddenly it didn't look comical any more. It looked like a heavy metal stick with three horrible spikes on the end. Astfagel smiled and looked around.
"'No,' he said, apparently to himself. "'Not here. This is not public enough. Come!'
A hand grasped each of them by the shoulder. They could no more resist it than a couple of non-identical snowflakes could resist a flamethrower. There was a moment's disorientation, and Rincewind found himself in the largest room in the universe. It was the Great Hall. You could have built moon rockets in it. The kings of hell might have heard of words like subtlety and discretion, but they had also heard that if you had it, you should flaunt it, and reasoned that, if you didn't have it, you should flaunt it even more. And what they didn't have was good taste. Astfigel had done what he could, but even he had been unable to do much to the basic bad design, the clashing colours and the terrible wallpaper. He'd put in a few coffee tables and a bullfight poster, but they were more or less lost in the overall chaos. And the new antimacassar on the back of the Throne of Dread only served to highlight some of its more annoying bas-reliefs. The two humans sprawled on the floor. "And now," said Astfigel. But his voice was lost in a sudden cheering. He looked up. Demons of every size and shape filled almost all the hall, piling up the walls and even hanging from the ceiling. A demonic band struck up a choice of chords on a variety of instruments. A banner, slung from one side of the hall to the other, read, "Hail to the Chieve." Astfigel's brows knitted in instant paranoia as Vasenago, trailed by the other lords, bore down on him. The old demon's face was split in a totally guileless grin, and the king nearly panicked and hit it with the trident before Vasenago reached out and slapped him on the back. "Well done," he cried.
"What?"
"Oh, very well done."
Astfigel looked down at Rincewind.
"Oh," he said. "Yes, well,"
he coughed.
"It was nothing," he said, straightening up. "I knew you people weren't getting anywhere, so I just..."
"Not these," sneered Vasenago. "Or rather, Mr. President."
The band had a go at another chord. The demons waited.
"Will there be potted plants?" said Astfigel, slowly.
"Hosts, plantations, jungles."
Astfigel appeared to be lit by a gentle inner glow.
"And carpets? I mean, wall to wall?"
"The walls have had to be moved apart especially to accommodate them all, sire. And thick piles, sire. Whole tribes of pygmies are wondering why the light stays on at night, sire."
The bewildered king allowed himself to have an expansive arm thrown across his shoulder, and was gently led, all thoughts of vengeance forgotten, through the cheering crowds.
"I've always fancied one of those special things for making coffee," he murmured, as the last vestiges of self-control were eroded.
"A positive manufactory has been installed, sire. And a speaking tube, sire, for you to communicate your instructions to your underlings. And the very latest in diaries, 2 eons to a page, and a thing for..."
"Coloured marker pens, I've always held that..."
"Complete rainbow, sire," Vasenago boomed. "And let us go there without delay, sire, for I suspect that with your normal keen insight... you cannot wait to get to grips with the mighty tasks ahead of you, sire."
"Certainly, certainly. Time they were done, indeed."
An expression of vague perplexity passed across Astfigel's flushed face.
"These mighty tasks.
Nothing less than a complete, full, authoritative, searching and in-depth analysis of our role, function, priorities and goals, sire."
Vasenago stood back. The demon lords held their breath. Astfigel frowned. The universe appeared to slow down. The stars halted momentarily in their courses.
"With forward planning," he said at last. "A top priority, sire, which you have instantly pinpointed with your normal incisiveness," said Vasenago quickly.
The demon lords breathed again. Astfigel's chest expanded several inches.
"I shall need special staff, of course, in order to formulate..."
"To make everyone sit up and damn well take notice. And they have been useful, after their fashion."
He looked into the depths of his drink, exulting quietly. And yet, in the depths of his curly mind, he thought he could hear the tiny voice that would grow louder over the years. The voice that haunts all demon kings everywhere. "Look out, behind you." It is hard to say whether the luggage was happy or not. It had viciously attacked 14 demons so far, and had 3 of them cornered in their own pit of boiling oil. Soon it would have to follow its master, but it didn't have to rush. One of the demons made a frantic grab for the bank, the luggage stamped heavily on its fingers. The creator of universes was happy. He'd just inserted 1 7-sided snowflake into a blizzard as an experiment, and no one had noticed. Tomorrow, he was half inclined to try small, delicately crystallized letters of the alphabet. Alphabet snow. It could be a winner. Rincewind and Eric were happy.
"I can see blue sky," said Eric. "Where do you think we'll come out?" he added. "And when?"
"Anywhere," said Rincewind. "Any time." He looked down at the broad steps they were climbing. They were something of a novelty. Each one was built out of large stone letters. The one he was just stepping onto, for example, read, "I meant it for the best." The next one was, "I thought you'd like it." Eric was standing on, "For the sake of the children."
"Weird, isn't it?" he said. "Why do it like this?"
"I think they're meant to be good intentions," said Rincewind. This was a road to hell, and demons were, after all, traditionalists. And while they are, of course, irredeemably evil, they are not always bad. And so Rincewind stepped off We Are Equal Opportunity Employers and through a wall, which healed up behind him, and into the world. It could, he had to admit, have been a lot worse. President Astvigal, sitting in a pool of light in his huge dark office, blew into the speaking tube again.
"Hello?" he said. "Hello?"
There didn't seem to be anyone answering. Strange. He picked up one of his coloured pens and looked around at the stack of work behind him. All those records to be analysed, considered, assessed and evaluated, and then suitable management directives to be arrived at, and an in-depth policy document to be drafted, and then, after due consideration, redrafted again. He tried the tube once more.
"Hello? Hello?"
No one there. Still, not to worry. Lots to do. His time was far too important to waste. He sank his feet into his thick, warm carpet. He looked proudly at his potted plants. He tapped a complicated assembly of chromed wire and balls, which began to swing and click executively. He unscrewed the top of his pen with a firm, decisive hand. He wrote, "What business are we in? ?" He thought for a bit, and then carefully wrote underneath, "We are in the damnation business! ! And this, too, was happiness. Of a sort.